Before we get started, I hope you'll celebrate with me that I've got two new great sponsors because I know they're going to be useful to you if you're building a business. The first is 99 Designs. They're the largest crowdsourced design company. And the best way to explain what they do is to tell you that I recently used them when I needed a template designed. And what I did was I described on 99designs.com what my ideal template needed to have. Next day, I got a batch of designs. I gave them all feedback, all the designers who created it. Day after that, I got a new batch of designs. I gave them feedback again. Next day, I had a new batch of designs. I finally picked the perfect one for me, and that's the one that I paid for. 99 Designs even let me pick the price that I paid. And you're going to be blown away by how many options you have. But if you don't like any of them, 99 Designs guarantees, and you don't have to pay for any of them. Check out 99design.com. Second company is DNA Mail. If you're running a business, you'd be a fool to also try to manage your own Microsoft Exchange server. I know because I was that fool taking on too much when it came to my email system. Let DNA Mail take care of it. They're going to guarantee uptime. They're going to give you 24/7 support. You can call up somebody in Los Angeles where I was recently living, not in a foreign country, not limited to a certain number of hours. You get all the support that you need so that you can collaborate with calendars, tasks, contacts, make sure your email is dependable, and so much more. And if you need Google Apps, they take care of you with that too. DNAmail.com. Finally, you already know about Grasshopper, the virtual phone system that entrepreneurs love. I've been talking here about how I have a Grasshopper phone number so I could be reached no matter where I am in the world, so I can have extensions, so I can have all the features that I need. Grasshopper.com will do the same thing for you. Check them out. Here's the program. Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And today I've got with me Sean Harper. Before I introduce you, Sean, I see behind you it says make it, print it, pack it, ship it. Where are you?
I am in a Kinko's. I couldn't make it back to my office in time, so I ducked into a Kinko's because I figured it would be reasonably quiet and they'd have internet I could use.
Oh, cool. That was smart. What were you up to today, by the way?
I was just running around. I was actually right now meeting with our lawyers. Not the sexiest meeting in the world, but what are you going to do?
It has to be done. All right, so let me introduce Sean. Sean Harper is the founder of TSSradio.com, a website that did $4.5 million in sales in 2008, according to Inc. magazine. By the way, Sean, I couldn't find anything more recent than that. What are your recent numbers?
We did about the same this year.
So 4.5, give or take, 2009's revenues. TSS-radio.com is a website that sells satellite radios and accessories. And that's one of the things I want to find out from you, how you built up this company, how it's making its revenues. But Sean, I've got a concern. The way that you and I met is not a big concern, but the way you and I met is someone in your office said, do you mind if Sean Harper does a guest post on your website? I said, well, I don't do these kinds of guest posts. But I gave it a thought for a bit, and I realized what they were trying to do. They were trying to get an article of yours on Mixergy so you can get the right anchor text so that it could link back to transfs.com, which is a website that helps business owners find deals on financial services. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That is what we do, and that is what we were trying to do, to get the link text.
You know what? I have no problem with that at all. I think if we talk openly about how you do stuff like that, and we talk openly about how TSSradio.com did so well, my audience is going to love us. If we don't, they're going to kill us both.
Fair enough.
Let's talk about how you started here. TSSradio.com, where'd the idea come from?
You know, both my businesses were started just because I wanted to use the product and it didn't exist. So TSS Radio started because my business partner in that, his name is Taylor, we're satellite radio fans. We both, Taylor especially, is a big Howard Stern fan. I'm more of a music guy, but you know, we looked at satellite radio and we said, this is great. I want it in my car. Okay, well, we've been listening to it for a little while, and the antenna on the back of Taylor's car breaks. I don't know if you've seen satellite radio, but if you have the aftermarket system, you have a little antenna that goes in the back of your car, and they break all the time. And so he went to look to try to find to buy one. And he went to Best Buy and he went to Circuit City and he actually couldn't find an antenna that was right for his car. And so we said, well, all right, maybe we'll just start selling antennas. And that's exactly how we started. We just found out where to buy these antennas. We put up a little website and we went from there to now we have over 2,000 SKUs. And it turns out that there are lots of these little parts that people need to keep their satellite radio systems going. And it's turned into a good business for us.
OK. Okay, but you're a guy who worked at the Boston Consulting Group as both an associate and consultant. You've been an associate at a venture capital firm. You know business too. What was the business opportunity that you saw here?
I'd done some work in spare parts businesses, mm-hmm. and that's what we think of TSS Radio as being. You know, think of your 7-Eleven. It's sort of a spare parts business. It sells stuff that you need right now. And the great thing about selling stuff that people need right now is they don't worry too much about how much it costs. And so we said, all right, well, and then the other good thing about selling a wide assortment of SKUs online is that none of the physical retailers can touch you. But there's no way Best Buy can stock 2,000 SKUs of satellite radio equipment. They stock 20, maybe. They probably stock less than that now. And so it was really those two factors that led us into TSS Radio as a business decision.
Where did the name come from? You see, I'm struggling with the name TSS Radio. Not that it, well, where did the
you
name
You don't like
from?
It? I think it's great. We were originally called The Sirius Store. And we thought that was a really great name because we sold Sirius radio stuff. You can't trademark Sirius. It's a star. It's a Greek god. And it turns out, though, that Sirius wasn't too keen on that idea. And so they asked us to change, and then they asked us again to change, and we said okay, because if we don't have Sirius on our side, it would have been difficult to grow the business.
I see. Okay, so TSS is short for The Sirius Store.
That's right. And we couldn't think of a better name, so we're like, all right, well, we have to change the name now. You know, whatever it is, if we do a good job, our customers will come to recognize our name, and that's what happened. So, you know, there are two sides of the story, and you probably noticed that TransFS, Transparent Financial Services, is not the sexiest name either. I'm just not a name guy. I don't think customers really care. If the name is unique and you deliver a good product, customers will know where to find you.
And the reason customers knew where to find you at TSSradio.com even after you change your name is because most of your customers are coming in from Google, right?
I'd say about 50 to 60%, depending on the month, come in from search.
And the other users?
About 20% is repeat business. Mm-hmm. And then the remainder, 30%, are coming in from links from other websites where they, you know, said that we had this certain product, or from, you know, banner ads. We sponsor some forums and blogs. One thing, and really the way that we got our start was just by talking up and helping people answer their satellite radio questions on chat boards online.
So you have somebody who answers questions on chat boards and then links.
No. Every single person in the company answers questions on chat boards.
You answer questions on chat boards.
Absolutely, yeah. And my business partner Taylor spends lots and lots of time doing that. So all of them, even the shipping guys, they answer questions on chat boards.
Really? What's a chat board that you spend a lot of time on?
Sirius Backstage is one, or Digital Radio Central is another one. Orbitcast is a blog, but we're active in the comments there. If it's a satellite radio related chat board, or even an auto related chat board where there's Sirius or XM related questions, there are TSS Radio people there talking and answering questions. We don't really pitch ourselves, we just answer questions.
Okay, and so 30% of your traffic is coming from those sources.
Yeah.
Wow.
From non-search links, basically.
Okay. All right. When you changed your name, how did you ensure that all the links, or what did you do to ensure that all the links that were coming to you were still undisturbed and that the Google rank wasn't going to be influenced?
We fumbled it, to be honest. And actually, we had a pretty big hit to our business after we changed the name, and we didn't do it right. You know, now I think if you search to find out how to do that properly, there are a few things you do. You do 301 permanent redirect from all the old URLs. You have to go and get a spreadsheet of all your old URLs, which is kind of a pain in the butt. And then you make sure you don't lose any pages, and then you go and ask everyone who did link to you that you think you can control to change the URL and the link. Now, you can't control everyone. There are a lot of links out there. You can ask them, and they'll just ignore you. And that's okay. That's what the redirect is for.
I see. And how did you guys do it?
We just changed the name, and then we're like, whoa, what happened to our search traffic? And then we sort of did it in reverse.
How much of your business did you lose?
At the time, search wasn't as big a thing for us, but we probably lost 20-25% almost overnight, which was not great.
Wow. How long do you
Young
think...
company, you make mistakes.
How long do you think it took to regain that?
A few months.
Okay. All right, so... We found out where the idea came from. What were you initially thinking the marketing was going to be for the business?
You know, we really went into it thinking that we could market it entirely online, and that, you know, when people have a need that it's, you know, difficult to fill and they walk into a local store and they can't find what they're looking for, that they go online. And I think we were right about that. You know, we've tried to be everywhere where people look for that stuff online, and it seems to have worked.
What specifically online were you thinking of doing? I want to get a sense of where your what your initial ideas were, and then also how they evolved as the business actually, as you actually launched the business and it grew.
Oh, that's cool. We really thought that if we went to where people were talking about this stuff online and we talked with them, that it would build our business. And I think we were right to a certain point, but we totally underestimated the impact that search would have. Like, if you had asked us, is search going to be half of your business, we never would have thought that at all. It turns out that it has been.
So you thought that just being in the chat boards and talking back and answering questions, that just being being a commenter on people's blogs, that would send over traffic?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
How long were you just doing that, and what was the result?
Well, to some extent, you could say that we've always done that. I mean, we're not really active in trying to game the search system. You know, we think of search as to do search right is you make a web page that's easy to crawl, make a website that's easy to crawl, and you go out and you get links in a legitimate, fair way. You don't pay for links, you don't beg for links. You create content, you answer questions, and you get legit old school links. And that's all just part of having a conversation. That's all we've ever really done.
But at what point did you figure that out, and how?
I think we're still figuring it out. You know, we've gotten better at it. You know, we've tried to learn as we go. But I'd say probably maybe like 2006, so it was about a year after we started the business, we actually thought we knew what to do to get good search engine rankings.
I see. So for about a year, you were mostly answering comments on forums, you were mostly in the discussions, and then somewhere towards the end of that first year of business is when you said, well, search engines are going to be a good potential for traffic for us. Good source.
Yeah, and you know, to some extent, one drove the other. I mean, we saw more and more search traffic coming to our site just inadvertently, and then we began to focus more on it as a channel.
Okay. Have you tried anything else? Have you tried AdWords? Did you try banners? Anything else that's worked and what hasn't?
Well, AdWords, so if you think about so there are two questions. We've tried almost everything. I mean, if there's a way to get a customer to the site, we've tried it.
Okay.
So we've tried AdWords. So we have a big and profitable AdWords campaign going always. We've bought banners on essentially all the related sites. And we've also done a lot of radio advertising on satellite radio, which works out too. But if you had to rank all of our marketing efforts in terms of cost effectiveness, and like from high ROI to low ROI, you know, organic search is, well, repeat customers are the best, then organic search, then you know, links from other websites that come free, right? Those all have great ROI because they're all free. And then AdWords, and then forum sponsorships and banner ads, and then radio ads are below that.
What's been terrible? Would you go in there and now you're looking back and saying, wow, that's not worth our time and money?
The one thing that in that business that didn't work at all that we had to stop doing was doing non-satellite radio ads. We had this idea that, well, there are all these people that listen to the regular radio, and the regular radio sucks, so we could just take our radio ads and explain to them that Sirius is better. That didn't work. It was tough.
And so, I see. How much money did you sink into that before you discovered?
not that much. Tens of thousands.
Okay. And how did you know? How do you measure how effective a radio ad is?
Gosh, it's really hard. It's really hard to have a real solid look at that. But one thing that's important is to know when the ads are airing. And so essentially, if you build a chart where on one axis it's when it's time, and you have little arrows where when the ads aired, and then you have traffic and purchases or whatever else you want to chart along the y-axis, I mean, you can see graphically the relationship. And then we've actually done things where we build multivariate regressions on, you know, we have these sort of six variables that describe how much we're selling every day, and it does it with reasonably good efficiency. We can explain about 80% of the variance in our sales. Mm-hmm. And then if you add in the ads playing as another variable, you can actually see what the coefficient is on that regression analysis.
Did you build that
yourself?
We did
some stats. Yeah, absolutely.
Really? And how do you know now about Sirius Radio? How do you know if that's working? Because that's national.
Oh, it doesn't matter to us where people are coming from. We know what time our ads play, and we know what time people hit our website.
I see. Okay.
So now you asked a very good question. I mean, it's not direct response advertising, so it's a lot harder to measure these things like brand recognition. Maybe they come back to your website a year later when they're looking for a part because they remember this thing. And that's a lot more complicated. But if the direct response isn't at least close to being profitable, we don't do it. Because to count on all that stuff that may or may not happen in the future, it doesn't seem fiscally sound to us. I don't know.
Why'd you focus on Sirius back in the day when there was XM as a strong competitor?
I think initially we started with Sirius because there was less competition. We thought that Sirius was going to win of the two of them.
Because of Howard Stern.
Yeah, among other reasons. I mean, you could see the growth trajectory, and XM had a bit of a head start, but Sirius's trajectory was a lot higher. And when we were starting the business a few years into the evolution of satellite radio, it just looked to us that Sirius was going to be the winner. And there was less competition in the Sirius space because they haven't been around as long.
I see. How long did it take you to hit the first million in revenue?
We did that in our second year.
Wow. What did that feel like?
You know what? We didn't pay that much attention to it. It felt good in retrospect, but we were just glad at that point that we were in business and we were making money.
How long
really
did it
take? I'll tell you what really did feel good is the customer numbers. When you hit your 20,000th customer, your 100,000th customer, your 200,000th customer. I mean, we really think about it in terms of customers, not dollars. You know, the customers, it's nice to know that you've helped out 100,000 people find something. It's cool.
At what point did it become profitable?
It depends on how you measure profit. Mm-hmm. Because do you incorporate the cost of capital that was invested? Do you incorporate the opportunity cost of the owners? And depending on how you measure it, we were either profitable in our first year or maybe we weren't profitable until our third year. The opportunity cost of the owner's labor is a pretty important variable.
Because you're saying that you didn't take a salary for a long time, or a real salary.
Oops.
I see.
That's right.
How much did you invest in the business?
We reinvested all the earnings, basically, for the first 4 years.
But the initial
We didn't have any outside capital. Okay. Just like a few thousand bucks, basically.
All right, I see.
It's cheap.
And did you have to buy all the parts yourself when you started? An inventory?
We didn't have to. We had a lot of competitors that were drop shipping. But we started that way a little bit. But we really wanted to control the customer experience. So over time, we've stocked everything that we sell. So, I mean, that's a pretty expensive proposition to keep that much inventory.
Why? Why'd you decide to stock it yourself?
Just easier to control the customer experience. If all you can tell the customer is, oh yeah, we sent the order to the warehouse, they're going to ship it sometime today or tomorrow, a lot of the times that's not good enough for the customer. You want to be able to tell them, no, I mean, I physically saw it get placed in the box, it's going out today, you'll definitely have it tomorrow. That's what at least our customers are looking for. They want to know that they're going to get the part.
What was the first office like?
It was my business partner's studio apartment.
Wow.
And then we moved the business to Chicago from, we'd been running it virtually from Los Angeles and Boston. We moved it to Chicago and we rented a warehouse, or you could call it a warehouse, and an office space, a place of business, sight unseen. And we showed up and it was in a good neighborhood. It's in Bucktown, which is a good neighborhood here in Chicago. It's sort of an up and coming neighborhood. But it was like on the worst block in that neighborhood, directly across the street from a housing project. and it was scary. We have hundreds of thousands of dollars of inventory just stacked up in piles in this sort of crappy little storefront almost. We're just hoping that we don't get robbed. We didn't get robbed, so it was good.
What would you do to keep from getting robbed?
We really tried not to open the front door, so no one knew that there was anything in there. Uh-huh. We just go in and out the back door. And we had a security system, and we had, you know, a good lock on the door, but mostly we just tried to keep a really low profile. Then we moved the business a year later to a nicer location.
What point do you know that you had a hit, that this was working out?
I think when people started to talk about it, you know, when and this is true of the new business too, of TransFS, when you, it's one thing to tell somebody as the founder and owner of a business about your value proposition and have them believe you. I mean, I could probably convince you of the value proposition quickly. You know, it's a good value prop and I'm very, very passionate about it. But when somebody else is convincing somebody to go to your website or to use your service, that's when you know you have something, you have a good product, because they're not bringing the same passion. They're not selling it. You know, they're at that point, you know that it's replicable and it'll sort of go viral at least a little bit.
You know, I'm thinking about the way that I said, wow, when I heard that the business was started in your partner's studio apartment. I'm wondering, why did that shock me so much? For a new company to be in a studio apartment is pretty normal.
Where else are you going to start?
But I think part of it is that there's actual inventory here. And when there's actual inventory, it's hard to keep it in an apartment. As it is, if you're running a business from your apartment, even if the whole thing is working is off a laptop, you feel crowded in by it. You feel like it's just always there. But if you have antennas in the apartment and you have, I don't know what else would be coming in, checks maybe coming in from customers, it just would feel tinier. Tinier.
It was tiny. Taylor was going crazy living there, and to be honest, it was sort of a coach house behind a bigger house in the suburbs in LA, mm-hmm. and there was a backyard in between the coach house and the house, and when we had a lot of product, he would actually store it on the lot in the backyard. So we were at CES in LA, in Las Vegas, and we were sitting there thinking, wow, we left inventory out on the lawn. I hope it doesn't rain. Because, unfortunately, it's LA. It doesn't rain that often.
All right, so you're working at the Boston Consulting Group. I see here on your resume two different venture capital firms. One of them actually didn't end up getting funded, so you didn't spend much time with them. But you spend time at these big companies. What makes you, at the end of that, say, I'm going to go launch a business that's going to be out of this guy's little tiny home where we might have to store stuff on a lawn? Why do that?
Why not? It's a lot more fun. I think you're working in venture capital, one of the things that it instills, I mean, you get to see up close people starting businesses and the success that they've had. And I think one of the good and bad things about it is you see most of these businesses after they've already made it to a certain extent. And you look at it and say, wow, I'd really like to be that guy who's getting funded, who's getting all this money, who has a successful business. And you just sort of begin to think that every business is like that. And so maybe it was sort of stupid, but it was like, well, if these guys can do it, I can do it, not having any idea how difficult it is. It's really hard.
Well, now that you've looked back, it's really hard, but do you feel that, well, doesn't it feel more accessible now? I mean, justified a little bit to look at all these other guys who are building businesses, to look at them and say, well, if they could do it, I could do it. And then you went out there and you did it. Maybe not to the extent of Facebook or Twitter, but we don't even know what extent they've hit.
I feel good about what we've done. I mean, I feel also, you know, being sort of in the earlier stages of starting the second business, that it does get easier. And you see these guys who've done it 5-6 times, and it gets really easy for them to do it. I mean, easy is relative, right?
All right, let's talk about the new business here. New business is called TransFS. Where did you come up with that name?
Well, the name of the business is Transparent Financial Services. Uh-huh. And I can't get the guy who owns transparent.com or transparent.net to sell me the domain name. So transfs.com is what it is.
And again, it doesn't matter because most people are going to be coming in from a link or... No, well, actually, does it matter? You said earlier it doesn't, but you're buying radio ads. You don't know where this brand's going to go.
Yeah, it may. I mean, we have an ongoing debate about it. And my bias is towards, and there are actually other people within the company who would say exactly the opposite, that you need a premier domain name. And you look at companies like Mint, for example. I mean, Aaron Patzer spent a lot of his initial resources and actually gave a lot of equity for the domain name of Mint, and it turned out really well for him. At least to this point, I've tried to buck the trend a little bit and say, you know what? If people are going to go type in transparent or transparent financial services into their browser, they may actually be typing it into a search engine anyway. They'll find us one way or another if they have it in their head that we're what they're looking for. They'll find us online.
All right. So. You launched a business in 2008. What was the vision for it back then?
You know, the vision behind this is really simple. When I was running TSS Radio, we got irritated consistently with trying to buy our financial services. In particular, credit card processing really pissed us off. It was a big, big expense for us. It was always more difficult to shop for than we thought it should be. The salespeople who were selling it were never on our side. They're brokers that work for the financial services companies. And so we just said, well, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. And so we began to think about what paradigms make it easier to shop for stuff. And, you know, a good one that's right in front of us all the time is comparison shopping. It's how we buy our airplane tickets. It's how we buy our mortgages to a certain extent. People love to comparison shop. We like to price compare. We want to know that we're getting a good deal. That's what we've done.
And this is a good deal on just credit card processing is what you were thinking of, just merchant services?
You know, ultimately, we're going to be the place where every business goes to shop for every financial service and know that they're getting a good deal, know that they're getting ripped off, and be able to really do a deep and honest comparison between the price, reputation, features, etc., everything that you care about between each of the service providers, which is hard to do. I mean, if you want to do that now, you have to get out a spreadsheet, make a bunch of phone calls, and do this analysis. It's just time consuming. No one has that kind of time, so we'll just have a computer do it and save everyone a lot of time.
Fair to say that this is like a lower my bills, but for businesses instead of consumers?
We call it bill shrink for business. I mean, there's a big difference between, and I don't know if Peter's cool with that or not, but the lower my bills is different. It's just a list of affiliate programs, basically. It doesn't really go deep into helping you make the decision about which product is better for you and what the trade-offs are. Bill Shrink does a really good job of that on the consumer side, and we do a really good job of that on the business side.
So how much of this was influenced by Bill Shrink? Was Bill Shrink around in 2008? I think they were just getting going, weren't they?
We were founded around the same time as Bill Shrink. So it wasn't like we were based on Bill Shrink, but we just sort of see that Bill Shrink is doing the same thing we do, and they have a better brand name than we do, so we're like them.
All right, why'd you decide to bootstrap this business using profits from the previous company instead of going out and raising money?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think to some extent every business is bootstrapped. You know, you're bootstrapped up to a certain point. Raising money isn't easy at all. So you either bootstrap up to the point where everyone bootstraps up to the point where they raise money, which for some businesses is never. And so will we ever raise capital for this business? Yeah, probably we will. But at least up until now, we focused on building the product. We've had enough resources to do that, and we haven't needed outside money, fortunately.
Are you guys profitable now?
Well, it depends on how you measure it. not really.
Not taking in your salaries. Not taking your salaries into account.
No, it doesn't depend on how you measure it. This business is nowhere near profitable. We think it will be quite profitable eventually.
And you get a cut of every deal that you make, right? Every time you introduce a customer to one of these financial services companies, they pay you, right?
Absolutely.
How do you keep it honest?
We charge them all the same thing, and we force them to follow what we call the TransFS guarantee. So they have to follow a certain set of rules of good behavior, basically. They can't have things like cancellation fees. They can't change the deal after they offer it to you. If they do any of those things, they're subject to financial penalties from us, and we kick them off the system and cut them off of new business, which they really don't like because they like the stream of business that we give them. We get it quite frequently. They actually ask to bribe us. We say, well, this is, you know, we charge a really, really thin slice. We charge 5 basis points, which is way less than any of their other sales channels do. And our deal with them is, listen, we'll charge you a lot less to send you customers than it costs you any other way to get customers. But you have to pass the savings on to the customer. And they do that. And we get this response all the time. Well, couldn't you just put us first in the list and we'll pay you 20 basis points? And almost every processor asks us that. The answer is always no, because you know eventually it would come out and it would be a big scandal and our customers would hate us. And we're just not... Doing a business like this is hard enough when your customers actually like you.
And is this a one-time fee or do you get a cut of each transaction going forward?
We get an ongoing revenue share for the customers that we deliver. The good thing about that is that it aligns our incentives. If the customer doesn't keep having a good experience, then we get cut off. We don't make any money. The bad thing about it is that if we were taking all that money or some amount of that money up front, it would be a lot more capital efficient to scale the business. But we think this way is ultimately a little bit more honest to the customer, and that's why we do it that way.
What other areas are there for you guys to go into?
Any financial product that a business uses to run itself. So I think probably next we'll do payroll services. It's not quite as complicated as credit card processing, but it is something that every business needs. And it is, you know, there are real differences between the providers. After that on the roadmap is 401k plans, which are very complicated and hard to choose between. And then we'll probably find ourselves in some form of insurance contract, like a general business owner's liability contract. Almost every business needs them. It's sort of a commodity. Yet they're really hard to compare in the status quo.
I was going to say, I think in many cases, the insurance contract comes in from a referral from the bank that you work with, from your broker, I guess, or your accountant, right?
Absolutely. And we're not trying to cut out referrals. I mean, maybe you got a great referral from somebody that you trust and you just want to sanity check it.
I see. Yeah. Let's see. So how do you get business at this? How do you get customers to this business?
It's exactly the same roadmap. You know, we talk it up online, we write useful content, we do some AdWords, we buy some banner ads, we count essentially on really high referral rate because we do give a good value to our customers. They save a ton of money when they use us. And we just sort of want to grow it organically online like that. You won't see us buying billboards or television ads or doing any of that silly stuff. Not that we could afford to anyway.
So I get emails from a lot of people who want to write guest posts. They clearly don't look at the site before they send out these emails. They just say, hey, he's got a good PR rank. Google likes him. Let's do it. I'm always wondering, and I always say no to these guys. I said yes to you because you actually have an interesting track record, interesting story. I was able to look you up in Inc. magazine and know that you were legitimate. Let them do the research, and now I can just come in and find out how you got to the numbers that you showed them. So what I'm wondering is, how effective is that? When you're sending out emails asking to write articles?
I think it depends on what you're saying. I mean, it's been pretty effective for us. I mean, we have a lot of good stuff that we can write about, and you know, we're always looking for new places to write about it. One article that we do really well with is we sort of have five steps to not getting jacked on your credit card processing. It's actually a pretty useful article. I mean, you know, if we can get that in front of more people, I think it does serve people pretty well.
So you already have a collection of articles that you've written that you know do well, and when you solicit bloggers to give you opportunities to write for them, you just pull out one of these articles and you send it over. You don't have to rewrite. You don't have to write something from scratch.
We write them all from scratch, but they're not totally unique. Like I can send you offline a few examples. I mean, you know, we have a message, we have a script, we sort of have things that we tell people over and over again, whether we're doing it online or whether I'm just talking to you face to face. It's not exactly the same thing if I'm talking to you versus somebody else, but you know, it's sort of the same message. It's not that different.
Uh-huh.
But you know, I think there are really we haven't really figured out how this marketing strategy works yet of getting folks to link to you by giving them content or by writing articles on them. I think that the more unique you are, the more you can make it really tailored to their audience and write something that's unique, the more it appeals to them. On the other hand, it's also more expensive.
And so what are the costs involved with this? Do you hire somebody? Do you have somebody who's on your staff who does this part-time? Did you hire someone just to solicit?
No, we don't have anyone that does it. I mean, personally, when I see a website that I read, if I think I can put something in, I'll just ask if I can write an article. You know, it depends. I think Stella, who's one of our employees, she was the one that contacted you. And I actually don't know if she's ever watched one of your interviews before or not.
My guess is probably not based on the email, but I'm not putting her down for it. I'm not saying this stinks. I just want to learn from it. And I have to say that Stella was way better than anyone else who'd send me emails like that. I followed up with her and I said, I don't do this stuff. And she said, oh, well, and then she had a great response. I forget what it was, but she had a response that really just got me. And my immediate answer to her response was, all right, let's book him. Let's find out more about this guy.
Well, I will pass that along. I mean, Stella's very talented. She's sort of graduated from college last year, has a ton of hustle, really believes in our value proposition. And she's sort of a jack of all trades at our very small company. And that's just one of the things that she does. She tries to promote our company online where she can.
So she might be looking around to see who's blogging in this area, who's reaching the business audience, and then she emails them and says, hey, do you want an article from my CEO? The CEO has a great background. He can put something together that makes sense for you. And then if she gets a hit, you do it, or you take one of your old stuff and somebody repurposes it.
Yeah, basically. And we certainly don't, I mean, it's... There are folks that have done way better with this strategy than we have, that have it really, really down to a process, and I think it's a very cost-effective way to market yourself if you do it right.
Who does it well?
Oh, that's a good... who does it well? You know, I actually don't have a good example.
Let's point the question to the audience. If anyone out there knows somebody who does this well, I'd love to interview them. I'd love to find out how they're doing this well, bring them on here, and I bet the rest of us can learn from that. All right. I have a list of questions here, actually not that long a list this time, that I wrote down as we were talking earlier that I didn't get a chance to ask you. The satellite radio business, what's the gross margins on that, or what's the net margins actually?
Net margins, I won't tell you what they are for us, but if you look at other sort of physical product e-commerce businesses like Blue Nile or Amazon that are publicly traded, I think if you're doing well in a business like that, you could be making 10%, 15% gross margins. We do a little bit better than that, maybe. It depends on the month, it depends on the year.
Okay. All right, what's next?
Well, I'm going to keep making Transfs big and keep TSS Radio going and just, you know, maybe we'll add a third business in here somewhere.
Do you take money out of the business on an annual basis?
Well, I put money into the business.
Right, into FS.
On a daily basis.
Really? Why? Why do you take so much?
Well, we've built a very complicated product that reverse engineers the pricing rules of the credit card processing industry, and that's not easy. And it takes, you know, we've also wrapped it in a pretty solid UI. And I think if you want to build a product that's really good, it does take money, and you need to do it before the customers are there, because the customers won't come until the product is good. So fundamentally,
the business is up and running now. The website does look beautiful, and the process is in place. Why do you need to spend more money on it? Where does the money go?
Well, historically, it's gone mostly to product development, and now it's switching a little bit more towards marketing.
I see. Okay. All right. Anything you want to leave us with? I've been asking a lot of really personal questions here. Thank you for answering them.
I'm an open book. I am.
You are? Why? Why are you an open book? You're not a business where you get a lot of benefit, do you, for being this open?
It's not really a tactical thing. It's just sort of how I am. I'm not very good at hiding information. I don't like to be cagey. I just think it's a lot more fun when everyone is honest with each other.
So your employees at the company, they know the sales from month to month? They know the profits even?
Yeah, absolutely.
Both numbers, they've got them every month. They know where you guys stand.
That's a good question. You know, actually, in both businesses, they're both available on internal intranets.
Really?
So I don't know how often they check them, to be honest. I have no idea. I'm sure they're some of our employees just don't care. Just as long as we're still in business and they trust us to keep the business, keep you know, paychecks and keep making it a good place to work, I think some people are satisfied. But yeah, I don't think there's any harm in showing that kind of information.
What about concern that they might copy the business, or concern that they might go to a competitor with these numbers and work for them?
Well, I mean, first of all, our competitors probably can make pretty good guesses. I mean, if your business is very similar to your competitors, their numbers probably look pretty similar to your numbers. I don't think there's a whole lot of secret stuff there. Mm-hmm. If you sit down with a spreadsheet and make some good assumptions, you can usually figure out how profitable your competitors are within a margin of error. You know, I think we have non-competes with our employees to the extent that they're enforceable. That's a good thing to have with your employees. We just try and make it a good place to work. If they want to leave and start another business, go for it. It's really, really, really hard. Good luck. I don't know.
All right.
I probably didn't think about it as much as a lot of people do, but we just are a lot more comfortable being open.
And how has it impacted the business to share these kinds of numbers and to be that open with people?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I think that, like, when you're promoting the business to other people, they can tell that you're open and honest, and it makes a difference. You know, especially in TransFS, where we're bringing, I think sort of an uncommon amount of honesty and transparency to a product that's historically been sort of secretive and shady. It's important that people understand that you're fundamentally an honest person, if in fact you are. I do think it makes it a better place to work when everyone's being honest and straightforward. In terms of actually being able to quantify that, though, I have no idea. It could be that all this just feels good to me and it actually has no benefit at all.
That's pretty honest. I know that I would rather work in an environment like that. It always feels weird when there are two or three people in the know in a company and the rest of you aren't. And as soon as they have real conversations, they shut the door and you sit there on the outside feeling like very clearly you're not part of the in-group.
Yeah, so then people start to worry, and it's like, oh, is something going on? Are we in danger? You know, I don't know. Everyone gets stressed out. That's no way to be.
Well, thanks for being this open here on Mixergy. Thanks for doing the interview with me. Is there any kind of anchor text that you want me to use when I link to you? I'll give you any anchor text you want.
I'll take it.
As long as it doesn't include Viagra, which I know it would.
Is credit card processing.
Credit card processing, and link over to TransFS with that.
That's right.
Okay. All right. If you guys want any more, you can just email me and I'll take care of it.
Right on.
Thank you very much. All right. I appreciate it. Great meeting you. It'll be up on the site soon. Guys, thank you all for watching. If there's anything in here that you've seen me be curious about and you're doing it, like maybe you're using blog posts well, or you're getting somebody to write blog posts and solicit places to put them, let me know. I want to meet as many people as I can who are doing smart things on the internet. I want to learn as much as I can about it. All right, Sean, thank you. Thanks for doing the interview, guys. Thanks for watching. I'll see you in the comments.